Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it will join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today we are discussing Minoru Kawasaki's Monster Seafood Wars. This is Minoru Kawasaki's 26th feature-length film, following a few shorts and a few TV miniseries. In Monster Seafood Wars, we follow Yuta, who has recently fell from his bike and dropped some living seafood into the river, which immediately grow into kaiju. It turns out, Yuta had developed a drug that would grow seafood to great sizes. The kaiju eventually attack Japan, and multiple attempts are made by SMAT, S-M-A-T, the Seafood Monster Attack Team, I'm pretty sure, to combat these kaiju, mostly with rice vinegar. But we take a break in the middle of the film to gloat over how good the kaiju taste when cooked in various forms. In the end, a giant robot is made by a friend and saves the day, and Japan is safe once again. So Tom, Monster Seafood Wars, we got through it. What do you think the goals of Mr. Kawasaki was? Why do you think he made this movie?
My understanding is that one of the original ideas behind Godzilla, before Godzilla was made, was like a giant crab thing or giant octopus attacks Tokyo.
Oh.
And they went with something else. And so there's this sort of a specific reference to like the OG kaiju film, Godzilla. And it's also a love letter, I think, to those films. The movie is done more with more cheese than probably even their budget restricted them to. I can imagine they could have made a less cheesy version of this movie, but they're looking for a certain aesthetic, right? Which is the Godzilla, Mothra type thing.
But were there any like shot for shot comparisons? Because I was also looking for that, but I don't think it actually paid homage to any of the Godzilla movies, at least that I've seen. I'm not that familiar with kaiju films.
Yeah, I'm not either enough.
But it felt more like a joke than a paying homage or paying respect to.
Yeah, I mean, it is a joke. I mean, but, you know, and that's, I think, part of the frustration with the movie is that it seems to be making a joke about them. I don't think it is satirizing kaiju films. I mean, there's a difference between satire and parody, right? Parody is making fun of something because there's a common cultural touchstone so we could understand the joke. Satire is pointing a finger at it and saying there is something wrong with this, and we're making a joke at it in order to kind of send it up and recognize what's wrong with it. I think this is more in the parodic vein.
Yeah, because it's more of a parody then.
Yeah, because it wants to look at that. I don't know if there's a shot-for-shot thing. Like you, I'm not expert in Godzilla Mothra movies, and I never will be. This is simply not an interest of mine. But it does look like it, right? We see the monsters, they're people clearly in costumes stomping on models of buildings. And then we cut to people completely differently lighted, looking up at a camera going, oh my God, kaiju. And then going from there. So it looks like those movies, and that's fine. And that's fine. I guess I'll say that twice, but I mean, I think that was the goal of the director. I think the goal of the director was to have like a little kaiju film where he can make little jokes and he can kind of enjoy this idea of like, well, what if we ate the kaiju? What would they taste like? Ooh, they taste really good. You know, that type of thing.
I agree with all that. But I want to add at least two things. I also imagine that ending shot where the stadium is a big bowl of seafood hot pot, I imagine that was a driving force for this whole thing. I can imagine him either being at the stadium or looking at the stadium like, oh, what if that was a giant bowl of food? How do I get there? And then honestly, the three kaiju, I don't want to say they look good, but they look there was actually a lot of love put into those costumes, I think.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, part of the problem is that they're sort of incidental. You don't see them a lot. When you do see them...
or you see them a lot, right? It's both. Like, most of these kaiju movies, there's a lot of buildup until you see the kaiju. This one, it's almost in the opening credits when you see, like, they don't hide it at all. So you, I don't know about minutes, but it felt like you were seeing them all the time in the movie.
I guess it's a good point. A lot of the movie, though, isn't like, let's run from the kaiju. A lot of the movie is this, like, love triangle that's going on.
Yeah.
And, like, who made the chemical that made the kaiju big? Like, so much of it is like, oh, no, he fell off a ladder on the girl. Are they having sex or did he fall off a ladder? Oops, I thought they were having sex, but he just fell off. You know, it's these, like, little kind of odd interpersonal things. And when the kaiju comes along, you don't really get the sense that they're destroying a significant area of
destroying
Japan.
Anything.
Yeah, they don't, you know, they just sort of wander around and occasionally attack each other, or occasionally they're not attacking each other. They're a team. It's a little unclear what they're doing, or even if they represent a threat. I mean, we're told that there's a national emergency going on, but there's, you know, there's like,
it only seems like a dozen people are concerned.
Yeah, exactly. But there's only like a dozen people in the movie.
Right.
There's no kind of sense of like a population. And so there's also no sense of like the kaiju are going somewhere or going to do something. With Godzilla, no matter what the Godzilla iteration is, it's Godzilla has a thing he wants. And when people figure that out, they have to deal with that. And that becomes a sense of tension in the plot.
Right.
These things are just sort of wandering around. And it doesn't, and apparently we can eat a lot of them, and it doesn't really interfere with their life.
The throwaway line was the crab cut some of the squid and octopus. And that's, and there was the one scene where the influencer picks up a giant chunk of meat off the ground. So presumably there's just big chunks of meat all over
the place. Yeah. But these things are just like falling apart, but also they're fine. Yeah.
Well, so how do you think they did with the money they had, Tom? How do you think the movie
worked
out?
It's not an issue of money. I think it's an issue of like building tension. Cause even when you make a spoofy comedy, right, you make a Farley Brothers comedy, or the ones that really love the Adam McKay comedies with Will Ferrell, like Anchorman and those films, Step Brothers. It's amazing. Those movies do have a sense of drama. I mean, they're dumb as hell, but the reason why you love them is like, there is something at risk and you're waiting for these kind of dopey people to resolve that thing. And they do, you know. Like in Anchorman, he has to resolve this issue with his girlfriend. In Step Brothers, he has to resolve this issue with coming of age, right? Step Brothers is about two, like 30-somethings who need to come of age. And even though they're idiots, you watch them develop and have to become of age. With this, it's just sort of like, oh no, there's no risk. There's no sense these things are going to like destroy. Are they in Tokyo? Are they in Osaka? We don't even know where they are.
Well, that national stadium might be a thing that if we knew where it was, then we, you know, if we were more familiar with, mm-hmm. you know, if they were saying Yankee Stadium, now you have
know New York.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So we probably should know it if we were more familiar with the stadiums.
National Stadium. It also doesn't look like a national stadium. It looks like a high school, you know, like a high school track or something like that. So there's no really kind of sense of danger. And that I don't think is necessarily an issue of the plot. I think, or rather of the budget, I think it's an issue of the plot, right? I think the cheap look of the monsters is fine.
Well, and they look cheap, but it almost looked like that was the intention, and they looked lovingly cheap. You know, like,
yeah.
You're right. I didn't really like the way the kaiju looked.
Yeah, it's actually consistent with the genre. That's how mm-hmm. kaiju look. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think the lighting isn't particularly good because it's a little overlighted, overlit.
And the fights were barely fights, yeah. Right? They're just wobble, they're, wobble, 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 wobble.
They're, yeah, I mean, they need to do. But that's part of the, that's more of the problem, I think, of like, what do these things want? Are they on the same side? Are they not? Like, they seem to be fighting occasionally, but occasionally they're like a team and they go everywhere together. So I don't know if it's like a couple who's getting divorced but doesn't realize it yet. They're just like trapped, going around together, and they hate it. It's really hard to tell. But since you don't know what they want or what the kaiju's relationship to each other, they actually even become sort of forgettable, not because it looks bad, but because there's nothing for us to hang any kind of emotion on. But with Godzilla and Mothra and Rodan, in those movies, as corny as they can be, we know the relationship between those different beasts, right? We know like Mega Godzilla and Godzilla are going to butt heads. This is a problem. We know that Mothra is sort of like a good guy on the side of Godzilla. They kind of get along, I believe, from what I remember. But there is a structured a structured relationship between the monsters, and that's just not the case here. So whenever we see the monsters, they're just sort of warbling back and forth, and maybe they like each other, maybe they don't. It doesn't seem to matter very much. The director seems to be much more interested in this kind of not very inspiring love triangle between the guy who invents the chemical that
Well,
makes the
he
monsters.
started it, right? And the other
He
guy
started,
finished it
and
was
the
the
other guy
idea.
finished it, I guess.
But I wonder if he needed to fill time, and that was the cheapest way to fill time. So I do wonder if that would have changed if he had more money.
What do you mean?
He would have dropped that and
The plot?
instead, yes.
It's the only plot in the movie. We
Right, but
what movie are we watching then?
I could imagine he had a more elaborate thing where there was armies and more people and more scientists and maybe backstabbing political intrigue in the scientist land. I don't know. But then it had to be boiled down to this like micro K drama where they're trying to clean the air conditioned vents, that
Yeah, we should probably tell people what it is. It's this one guy who looks like he's about 12 years old, is part of, I think it's an organization of super smart people who do projects.
Well, no, he. Well, so there's his dad owns a seafood place, and he used to make chemicals.
But I thought he was part of an organization that did it.
I don't know, because then his rival was part of an organization, and like the 12-year-old got kicked out. Yuta got kicked out.
Yeah, but then there's the other guy who is still in the organization, like the guy who plays video games without looking.
Oh, I is he in an organization or is he
He's in an
just?
organization because he mentions he was working on something with black holes or something like that.
Okay.
And that's when he tells the female lead, like, don't play with these people's hearts, right?
Ah, yep.
Because he mentions like he's still working on something for it. So it seems like the male lead, what's his name again?
Utah.
Yuta was part of this organization. I believe he gets kicked out for going over budget, possibly, and then has to work for his parents' seafood place.
Well, is he working for him? Because he's just bringing the offering.
Maybe he's just bringing the. I don't.
Right?
I
It
have no
looked like he was a
idea.
delivery guy, but I don't think he was. He was wearing a bowling shirt, it looked like.
Yeah, he's wearing a bowling shirt for most of the movie until he gets accepted into the monster organization. Which is also confusing because it seems like everything was happening in both like over the course of 6 weeks, but also in 6 hours. I
Right.
wasn't
Yeah.
but I think he's part of an organization. I think they're all are, and I think they're developing different things. And he started to develop this chemical which makes cells grow infinitely large or divide infinitely. Which is in designed, I think, in order to end world food hunger problems.
Well, they were a little unclear about that because they did say that at one point, right? The food crisis, they called it. But then they also said he was just interested in making monsters at a young age, so he's still just interested in making monsters. And he didn't really clarify which one it was for. He just said nobody's going to give you money to make monsters.
Yeah, but it's also he doesn't make the monster, right? It's the other guy.
Well, because he couldn't finish the formula, whereas the other guy finished the formula.
But the other guy also had to. So, for our audience, the movie begins with the main character taking an offering to, I'm guessing, a Shinto temple?
Yeah, Shinto shrine. Yeah.
Yeah. And he then falls over, and the offering, which is his seafood, it's these three, it's a squid, octopus, and crab, which we never see, actually. It's just,
right.
We don't, they apparently didn't have the money for that. Disappears. And the what you learn is his romantic rival apparently stole them in order to inject the chemical that makes them larger into them and then release them. But we don't really know why.
Well, at one point he says he wanted the attention.
But
then Utah got the attention.
Yeah, I guess
but
he
wanted... You know, that's another problem with this movie. You don't see anything happen. You're told everything that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Every step of the way, you're told something happens. You never actually see it.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah, there's not a lot of... For a monster movie, there's a lot of exposition.
But you know what I did like? The little interviews that they cut to. I think that could have worked either as the whole movie, maybe, or as part of a better movie.
Maybe it's part of, I mean, that is an exposition strategy, right? The interview.
Yeah, but I don't know. I thought they were pretty funny, some of them, especially like some of the scientists, like how bored they sounded, I thought was very funny.
Fair enough.
But then can we talk about the eating segment? My gosh, how many minutes was that, Tom? Last week you said it was about 15 minutes. That felt like the hour to me. It felt like, hey, you know how we can make a movie? We're just going to cut to people being like, oh, this is the best food I've ever had.
Yeah, I know. It's maybe only 20 minutes. It comes in at about the halfway mark. So about 45 minutes in is when this happens. And it's a really funny idea. This idea of like, oh, we killed Godzilla. Actually, it tastes pretty good. It's really good. We can't stop eating it. Like, that's a really funny idea. But any kind of funny idea has to be developed, right? It's like, okay, oh, this is really good. This is really tasty. How does this change the world? How do we live in a world which has Godzilla meat and it's really good? And oh, here's some underground Godzilla meat. Oh, this is counterfeit. This is really bad. Nope, we're going to try and regulate the Godzilla meat. I mean, you could just see like how that kind of joke can escalate and actually create some world building and create some stakes and be dramatically interesting. Well, here for like 20 or 25 minutes, it's just people... eating the food, or we get their internal monologue. There's a lot of internal monologues.
Yeah, there is.
There's a lot of internal monologues of them going, this is the, I cannot believe how good the kaiju tastes. This is amazing, which is the only thing, right? It's just people being amazed by it. Mm-hmm. There's nothing underground. There's nothing illegal. There's nothing even seemingly addictive about it.
Mm-mm.
Like that seemed like an obvious joke that they didn't make. Then they drop it. It's like 20 or 25 minutes, and they drop it, and they go back to like, we have to kill these things because we're not entirely sure why we have to kill these things. They don't seem to be destroying anything. And then you have the guy at the end who apparently made the monsters is now going to prevent them from being destroyed for reasons that are unclear.
You know, one of my favorite parts about that sequence is there's like a news guy talking to people on the street. And at one point he goes, it seems like everybody forgot about bubble tea. And I just thought that was a funny, like, bubble tea was so popular, but now kaiju meat's so popular, everybody just forgot about it.
I
did like that line, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Tom, do we think a budget would have helped this movie? Do we think if it had more money, it would have fostered a better film?
I don't think so. I don't know. You need a new script. So I think a budget would have done some world building, right? We would have seen the world be in threat from these things. We could have gotten big street scenes in which
people were running.
Things were destroyed. Yeah, we could have had a lot more of that. I think, yeah, so yeah, I'll take that back. I'll say the budget really would have improved the movie. But I think it would have improved it in a sort of standard Hollywood like forgettable way,
right?
It would have made something competent and kind of forgettable, which I think this movie for all its flaws, is weird. And that's actually, even though it's not as entertaining as, let's say, one of these MonsterVerse movies, which are pretty terrible, even though it's not as entertaining, it's different. It's weird. Mm-hmm. It's not like something mm-hmm. else you're going to see.
Yep.
And I think maybe a budget would have helped them open up a little bit and maybe explore the kind of weirdnesses they were going for, like this idea of, which I think is the central idea of the movie that it doesn't develop, which is, what if we start eating these things and they're really good, right? Like, what if this becomes a delicacy? What if this becomes the new caviar? Like, there's so many avenues to go down there. Maybe if they had a budget, they would have been able to explore those avenues as opposed to
just telling us about it. I really think a budget would have let them show us more instead of tell us more. Unless yeah. that's the movie maker's, you know, MO. But like at one point, the sprinklers in the stadium come on, right? The ones that seem to be aimed at the seats of the...
yeah.
And then somebody, and I'm like, I guess they're putting more vinegar out is what I thought it was.
Yeah, I did too.
But they had to say, the water from the sprinklers is washing away the vinegar. So at that point, I'm like, oh, is that's what's happening? So I wonder if they could have, you know, either given the vinegar a color, could have had the suits react to the vinegar, could have had the monsters react to the vinegar, and then showed them getting stronger when the water washed away the vinegar. You know, there might have been a lot of steps along the way where they could have shown instead of told if they could have afforded to do it.
That's a really good point. That is a really good point that they would have been able to extend their sequences. They would have been, yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
So, I mean, they use CG quite a bit and they use green screen quite a bit. It was pretty obvious you could tell, but that could have been an aesthetic choice. So what's
also
they
not
with?
A problem.
No.
Like lame. I don't mind lame special effects. And in a movie like this, it actually...
Yeah.
Is part of the spirit of it.
Super fun. So it wasn't that they were afraid to use special effects, or, you know, they weren't afraid of the computer. It wasn't like they didn't have a special effects team. So, but they just didn't have much of a cast for like a big, you know, extras or anything like that.
Yeah, I think a lot more people. When the world is at stake, you need a lot of people, right?
They even mentioned that there was a food festival at that stadium that day. And that's why the monsters were going there.
Yeah, but we don't see anybody there.
There was nobody there, right? So
yeah.
Even just to fill the stadium with people sitting there and then maybe a few tents or whatever down on the field mm-hmm. for the monsters to crush.
Yeah, it gives you a sense of like, why I forgot why they were going there. That's right. I completely right. forgot. They're there now. And
you know, they could have had a sign, you know, food festival instead of having the dude having to say it.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. 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 And they could have also had an older cast. Mm. I think one of the things with this movie that's so weird right? is that everybody looks like they're a teenager, but they're also like scientists.
Accomplished scientists. Yeah.
Yeah. And that could be a thing. It's like, this is the organization of geniuses who are like 15 and doing things. That could be fine, but it just comes off kind of as, well, these are my friends and they're available.
right.
So they're, you know, he's.
Now they're playing it off like they're 35 to 55, have been yeah. in the field for a while. And yep.
Yeah. But they're clearly teenagers and it's real weird. Yeah.
So what do you think, Tom? Does this make the keep making movie list?
I mean, he's going to do it anyway, right? He's made 25 movies. I don't think we're putting the brakes on this man's career.
Yeah. And I think he's had a bunch since, right? Even though this movie came out in 2020. Let me see here. Oh, no. He's had two movies since. So he's like a movie a year type of a guy. Yeah, you know, it's a no from me. I enjoyed the movie, but this is going to be a rare no from me. Audience, if you want to watch a silly kaiju movie, there's tons of them out there. So this one doesn't necessarily need to be on your list as a kaiju film or a micro-budget movie film. So I'm not going to put it on our list here, Tom.
Yeah, I think I'll agree. And anyway, looking at the recent movies he's made, so his most recent movie is Super Legend God Hikosa, which is also about scientists who make a giant monster. sturgeon. So it's all, it's also about monsters from the sea who are attacking things. Yeah, so I'm going to go also with no. And I think that's a really good point you make. Like, if you want a spoofy kind of silly kaiju movie, the originals kind of do that function. I don't think we need this.
It's official. Monster Seafood Ward has not made the list. Hopefully we'll watch some more of Minoru Kawasaki's movies and hope that Mr. Kawasaki keeps making movies, which it seems like he is. Great. Another one comes up on Amazon Prime. I'll check it out. Maybe one of those will make the list. What was your favorite movie by Minoru Kawasaki, audience? Let us know on social media at Talking Studios.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is, and Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next time when we discuss Circle from 2015. Stay tuned for our impressions of this film. Next week, audience, we're actually going to be discussing two pieces of film, Circle from 2015 and The Vault from 2011, which is a web series by the same director. Tom, how was your watch of Circle and The Vault?
So I watched The Circle years ago, actually, on Netflix, and I watched The Vault yesterday in order to prepare to talk about The Circle and see the director's other work. And since both of us had watched The Vault, I suggested let's bring this into the conversation. My experience with both of these movies was frustrating. And why it is frustrating, I think, has to do with the genre. I don't know if these movies necessarily are categorized in, but I think is worth talking about in order to highlight my frustrations. And that category is absurdity. And absurd plays or absurd movies, a good example of this would be the work of Samuel Beckett, usually create a strange, unrealistic situation in order to highlight something kind of essentially true about human nature. And so you have this irony at play in which the unreal circumstances brings out something fundamentally real about human nature. You could think of Waiting for Godot as this example of two people waiting seamlessly for no reason for someone or something named Godot to appear. And what that brings out is the human condition, the sort of endless waiting for something better. And our lives are whatever structured by that waiting, not by the arrival of this thing. It's an absurd situation, but it brings out something true. I think both Circle and The Vault are not necessarily absurdist in the sense of there is a somewhat realist context in which both of these movies are working in, but the lack of explanation for this context puts the people in the film into a circumstance in which they have to deal with they have to deal with something essential about their humanity in both instances. And my frustration is that what is revealed about the human condition is either not necessarily that interesting, or I don't find it to ring true. And that's my kind of my first impression with these movies and my kind of frustration with them. KJ, how about you? How was your first impression?
Circle, I found after watching Cube, which audience, don't worry, we'll eventually get to Cube. We'll get to Cube. I was craving more low-budget films, and I don't know if Netflix suggested it or I did a search, hey, if I liked Cube, what should I watch? And Circle came up, and I enjoyed it. It's a one-room movie. I thought it was super fun the way it worked. But watching it the second time, it was not as much fun as watching it the first time, audience. Hopefully this will be your first watch and not your second. And then I scrolled down IMDb and realized the writers and directors had worked on The Vault. So I wanted to give that a shot. And my watch there was mostly while doing something else until it really caught me. And then I just couldn't not watch it. Kind of like if you're not feeling well and you're just watching something on the TV and you're just binging it for binging its sake. So that's how I recommend watching The Vault. Wait till you're not feeling well or there's like a rainy day, you're stuck somewhere, you got nothing else to do, and hit play on The Vault, audience.
I love your advice. Just wait until you're sick.
And it might happen this week.
Damn this movie.
Circle's on Netflix, and The Vault is on YouTube in its entirety at the time of this recording.
Wow, Talking Studios.
This is Minoru Kawasaki's 226th feature... No, that can't be right. Hang on. Do you think it's 200, or do you think I just hit the two twice?
I have no idea. I'm looking up an interview with him, maybe. How could he make 226 movies?
Right, that doesn't... No, okay, it's 26. It's 26. I mean, that's still out of control, but...